Hey listeners, before I get into this episode, I have a quick ask to make. I started this podcast as a research project on how to be a top individual contributor in the product design space. My goal for the show was to learn what it takes to be an individual contributor that is doing amazing, impactful work that they love doing day in and day out and getting paid top dollar while they do it. Becoming that type of individual contributor is the ultimate job security. With close to 100 hours of interview recordings, this has naturally led to the creation of the short-form video articles that synthesize my learnings into 10-minute listens of actionable content. You might recognize these as my morning walk episodes or the hashtag shorts episodes. To my surprise, those episodes have been very well received and listeners have enjoyed the synthesis of what I've learned. This has led to the next chapter of my research project, which is beginning to synthesize what I've learned into a new newsletter called Thinking Out Loud About Design that you can subscribe to right now for free. Thinking Out Loud About Design is an email newsletter and podcast that basically contains all my synthesis for my long-form interviews. It's pure distilled learnings that you can apply to your career immediately. This content is for you if you are a couple years into your career and you're trying to make that move from mid-level to senior designer and senior designer to staff designer. I mainly focus on becoming high-performing individual contributors in the product design industry. A free subscription gives you full access to the newsletter, podcast episodes, and website. You won't have to worry about missing anything because every new edition of the newsletter goes directly into your inbox. So my ask is this. If you have gotten any value out of the way of product design, or if it's helped you in any way or someone you know, please subscribe to Thinking Out Loud About Design and get the distilled learnings on being a staff-level individual contributor. You can find a link to the newsletter in the show notes of every episode of this podcast and on my LinkedIn page. Just look up Caden Damiano. Thanks again for listening and supporting the way of product design. I wouldn't be doing this if you guys weren't listening. Now, on to the show. Welcome to the Way of Product Design. I'm your host, Caden Damiano. This podcast has one mission: help product designers generate massive value for their clients, their companies, and themselves so they can do the work they enjoy the most. We know design is valuable, but how can you unlock the true value of design in your work? To help with this, I interview top performers in design, product management, and engineering so you can understand what's valuable to your stakeholders, your bosses, and your customers. So enjoy this episode. Thanks for listening. Hey, listener, welcome to the podcast. I'm here with Bobby Lloyd, who is currently a UX UI strategist at Goldman Sachs. Another awesome guest from the Dallas area. I need to get out to Dallas because I'm meeting so many designers from there. Bobby, would you like to introduce yourself to the listener? Just tell me a little bit about your story, how you got to where you are today, and we'll go from there.
Cool. So we got a little bit of time. I won't take a lot. Listeners, how's it going? Hey, I'm Bobby Lloyd. Used to be a graphic designer, UX, UI strategist, product designer, whatever you want to call us now. I've been doing graphic design since the late 1900s. So let me take it a step back. I went to school for graphic design, Southern University in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Graduated in 99 with a BFA. After having my degree, man, moved to Texas, had a few jobs, mostly graphic design, all graphic design really, and landed a job at FedEx. Now, this job, man, it's a whole story in itself. Okay, so I'm not going to go into that for you, but let's just say I didn't apply for the job, didn't qualify for the job, but somehow I got the job out of 300 applicants, and I wasn't even an applicant. Either way, came in, hit the ground running. It was a web specialist job. And at the time, you had to know HTML and things like that. If you didn't, don't call yourself web anybody. You're a graphic designer. Either way, got the job, came in, learned the things, proprietary software, started moving up. Things were really good. From there, moved on to with our developer team and more in the IT department. That's when I really started honing skills that I had no idea I was really starting to dabble in. That's when I started with, I guess, being a QA analyst. And from doing QA and understanding applications, why they're broke, how to build up the issue again, how to recreate it. And just knowing how to write steps and how to understand the user, how to understand application. At the time, I figured I was boring work, but it was great. Went from there and took another huge step in my career path that laid foundation that's unmovable. I went into tech support / customer support. It was supposed to last a week, lasted 8 years, basically because our developers, they really didn't like happen to own the tech support queue. So once I took it on, it was like, Bobby, you're doing okay. Why don't you keep this for a little while? I was able to take that from being something extremely obscure to something well-developed, to where we had first, second, and third tier tech support all communicating, to where we were able to get information from our end customers back to our developers. And it was a huge sense of accomplishment. Looking back on it, like I said, it really set the foundation for the empathy I have as a UXer, because I understood how customers felt when they get an application that's been designed by, no offense to anyone, designed by C-suite and developers, and it looks like it. You have an application that looks like a cockpit of an airplane, and as a user, you have no idea where to start. So with, like I said, bringing this tech support, customer support, basically to fruition, it helped me understand how building a team is really important, how good help is really hard to find. And man, learning from the school of hard knocks, I wouldn't suggest it for anyone, but man, you can't beat it. You really can't. You can't beat being the unheard person in the meeting, but your information is vital. You can't beat having to understand how to articulate your questions so that they last no longer than a true 15 seconds, or else the developer's ears are just turning off. And skills like that are things I still use today to when I have to win battles with other parts of our tech leads, or our C-suite, our product, or our business, or operations, having to be able to come in, quick jab, get them to hear what I'm saying, understand what I'm saying, or understand the question and be able to give me a quick answer. That came from, let me take a few more steps back. I've stuttered since the fourth grade, and it gets bad sometimes. If I get nervous, it'll take me 5 minutes to count to 10. So that's why I treat everybody the same way. The way I'm talking right now, if I allowed myself to be nervous, this would be a horrible interview. But anyway, though, that goes into the way I structure my sentences, the way I structure my conversation is, okay, let's get something out. Let's make it quick. Let's make it understandable, so we can have a decent conversation without seeming like that doggone Bobby Lloyd is slowing us down. So with FedEx, I'll take it back there now. I was going through tech support, and there was a mentor there. He didn't know he was a mentor. He saw me doing a little bit of design work. And so we talked a little bit, and he was like, dude, you're doing UX. And I'm like, really? So being under his wing for all of maybe 6 months before he left and went to Cap One, Terrell, before with being on his wing, it was able to open some things up, kind of smooth some rough edges, and really start to put some science to the art, to the craft that I was already doing anyway. So going from FedEx, and after I left there, it's been, man, gladiator. I feel like I've been a mercenary for hire, meaning that I've been a contractor ever since, and is each role is you're going for blood. When I say going for blood, meaning that you're giving your all. I'm coming in, I'm taking heads, because I gotta be the best. I being a contract. Ben, shoots, AT&T, Allstate, shoots, 7-Eleven. I've been in some pretty big name companies, and now being at Goldman Sachs, it's no different. It's like the pressure is on, even during the interviews. It's like, impress me, get the job, continue to impress me. And it's not at all a bad thing. And I'm speaking to those who are looking at UX as, oh yeah, I can't wait to get there. I want to do it. I see the dollar signs. Understand, it comes with this fair share of bumps and bruises. So I went from designer to QA specialist to tech specialist, customer support specialist to UXer, started doing research, product designer, and now more of strategist, just leaning on my entire history for my experience of understanding the customer, at least from the spectrum I have, and understanding the business from being on the outside looking in. Like that kid who watched the parents drive the car, and when they finally get a chance to drive, it's like, okay, I got this. Mm-hmm. So that's where I am right now. I hope that wasn't too long of a spiel, but that's what made me, basically.
That's cool. I really like the analogy of driving the cars. Like when you start getting into strategy, you're actually setting the direction and stuff like that. And yeah, even for me, just really, even with like traditional education and product design and digital product design, and trying to see like the opportunity. What's funny is I thought I settled going into interaction design. I didn't know that how much you can make in this field. So I was actually pleasantly surprised when I graduated. But yeah, just how hard it is to get in, to prove yourself.
It can be that way. But what I've been noticing is that a lot of times we put a lot of pressure on ourselves. Some of us who have the background of being true artists, whether we want to admit it or not, we wear our feelings on our sleeves. And a lot of times we don't communicate as well as we would think that we're communicating. And as your communication has a lot more than we to do with what you just say. Is body language, is what you hear, is how you hear, is how you regurgitate that information, is how you crush that information and let that information make you feel certain ways. That all goes into communication, but that's all into the psychology of UX also, and CX. Think about it from a CX perspective. We have to think about where the customer is at the time when they're interacting with the application, how they're feeling, what kind of mood they may be in, what kind of mood do we want our application to keep them in or set them in. Well, those are CX things that's real life. And those are things for us as UXers who come into the workforce. Some of us have, like you were saying, have no idea what to expect and are pleasantly surprised. But what I also hear too, just like you said, it's a lot more work or it's a lot more to it than what they initially think it is.
Yeah, there's a reason why the salaries are so good while we're making the big bucks. And you talk about communication a lot. Like in this interview, like it's been about being able to interface with non-design partners, include them. Do you think that if you took the good communication out of a good UX process, I guess like good UX process, meaning hard skills wise, could you actually design like good experiences?
Man, not at all, because that's all user UX is, communication and pixels. Because it goes back to graphic design. If anybody
has good
kind of basic design, if you're creating an ad or a logo or anything, you're communicating something. Because a logo is a communication. It's your face is a communication. Your looks, all this is communicating. So if you take that out of UX, out of our process, man, there is no process.
Yeah, and like when I noticed like that when I was a junior designer, that I had a really hard time like getting work done because I felt like I had to like educate people. I felt like I needed to explain my whole process of what I was going to do. And as I started getting into like, you know, senior realm, what I learned is that like the real professionals, the ones that like really progress in the career is you actually talk less. It's actually talking less. And then being more intentional. And then also you don't have to talk about the process. I realized real quick that executives really don't care how the sausage gets made. They really just care that you're delivering value to the company. And if you just talk about that, that's like keys to the city, right? Like you get more done, people trust you more.
I'm hearing you say this, and I can definitely appreciate, I guess you articulating something like this, that a lot of times, and what that boils down to for me, and in Bobby's terms, man, a $5 word would do just as good as a $50 word. Meaning that as far as process, the way we lay things out, man, you have some folks who can talk themselves into a job and they talk themselves into some crap because they can't deliver on what they're saying. They can read it all day long. But when it comes to actually executing, you can't get them to do anything at all. They can't live up to all the hype. Which goes into, you probably noticed, some of the best ones, they don't do a lot of talk. They talk, they explain, but like I said, they're not taking this much to say this much. The thing about UX, the simplicity of it is just that it's simple. The best UXer is worth their weight in gold, but we know how to break things down, make it so easy to where you get it like this, as opposed to maybe. So the guys you were seeing, I would challenge you to probably go back and think about the conversation because I'm pretty sure they said something. They probably explained a little, but they didn't have to. One of my mentors told me a long time ago, Bobby, when you send these emails, man, you're putting too much in there. You're explaining too much. People don't need all that. They don't want to see all that. They're not reading all that. He was like, keep it short, sweet, and simple, and be able to gauge it so you get the type of answer you want and or need. Same thing with us. The best of us, We can come to a meeting, listen to a whole doggone meeting. I don't care if you give us 5 minutes. We can break it down. Everyone would probably be like, oh, okay, thank you. We said through 45, 55 minutes, and you could have said that at the beginning. Okay, cool. That's what we do. So to your point, yeah, the best ones say the least, because it's all in a performance. It's all somewhat in process. And I'll let you kind of segue, because I know it's something we want to talk about. Somewhat in process, because some of us can be too process heavy, and man, death by process happens all the time.
Yeah, it's super interesting, because yeah, when I came out of like my program, it was all about the process. I spent 4 years learning about the process. And then I do too much process, or if I was doing enough process, there's a lot of people that like, they don't have that level of rigor in their work. And they'll be like, hey, yo, yo, Caden, like making like a user environment for information architecture, or doing a systems map. A lot of designers like said, what are you doing? This isn't our job. And it was frustrating, because there's a lack of process, but there's also, with the rise of boot camps and stuff, like a over-reliance on the process. And it's almost like there's either too much or too little process. That's like the problem that you mentioned that you're starting to see in the industry. I definitely see it as well. Yeah, there's not, maybe they're talking too much, not doing enough, or they're doing too much and they're not talking enough, and then they have to redo work. Yeah, there's an interesting balance there. And I know it's very ambiguous to start off, but let's unpack that.
Caden, that is not ambiguous at all. Let me make this real simple real quick, then I'll go back and build on top of it.
Okay.
It's learning a martial art. I think about Bruce Lee was, I could be wrong, I don't know. I just know from what I know of him. Walk into a room confident that he can kick anybody's butt. Reason being is that he knew how to do what he knew to do. When I say know how, meaning that's why there's degrees on a black belt. Once you get that black belt, you know how. We got the knowledge. But reason we get paid, some of us who've been in the system for a little while, get paid as much as we do, because we don't have the wisdom. We don't have to apply that knowledge. Same thing with those degrees on that black belt. That you for first degree black belt, someone who's probably a sixth degree brown belt, and they still whoop your butt because they know how to do everything with those moves. You being a black belt, you learn as many moves as you got. You got those moves under your belt. Yeah, I know how to do this type of kick, that type of punch. Man, I can break your nose with like just, okay, cool. But do you know when to do it? I can come in and have the simplest, the lowest of education, so to speak. But I've been doing it so well, and I know how to make it. I've made it my own, to where I'm going to do it really good, and I'm going to probably kick your butt with it. Same thing with UX. I mentioned earlier about how I feel like there's a loss of integrity in the UX world, in the UX space, because of, I shouldn't say it's because of boot camps, because some people come out of these boot camps are doing great. So I'm not going to knock it. But at the same time, we have some.
And I know plenty of boot camp graduates that impress me. So let's caveat that, listener, before you put us on blast on social. Or
Yeah, we can't knock them at all. But at the same time, we can knock them for creating some monsters. Mm-hmm. And I would probably venture to say maybe 80% of the time, they may be creating monsters. And they're not the only ones. They're not the only culprits. You have these mentors out here who are filling these folks' heads and feeling like, oh, what? You have been a front-end developer for 6 years? You would be a sure-in for a UXer. Why? Because you've been around us? Because you know what we've asked of you, that'll help. But you're not gonna be like the best of the best as soon as you come through the door just because you've been around us. And that's sometimes with these boot camps, with these mentors, and even sometimes each other, just peers, just causing one another. So as we've said already, UX is a lot more than just strategy, just design, just research, just listening, just communication. It's a psychology. And it is definitely a lot of wisdom that goes into this. The more wisdom you have or experience you have, the better you're going to be at this, because you've been at a few different places. Like I said, I've been contracting for the last 7 years, almost. No, 6 years. So I've been contracting for that long. So I've seen a few different companies. I've seen a lot of different flavors, some good, some not so good. So with that, I feel like I bring... This is not me putting a commercial for myself, but I'm just saying folks who are like me, who have been in a few different places, bring a wealth of knowledge with them. And with their wealth of knowledge, it eventually will turn into some wisdom and experience. And they will be good at whatever you throw their way. Or they can probably say, yeah, I've seen it before. We handled it like this. Oh, I've never seen it before. But that sounds, and I'm saying that as a caveat to, I remember for a long time, folks who had like a lot of jobs on their resume, they were frowned upon, like, wow, you were only here for 6 months. You were only here for 8 months. You were only here for a year. But I think now it's starting to turn. I'm not sure if you kind of feel the same way, but I think it's starting to change now to where when companies do say that type of just different knowledge bases, and it's starting to hone in on it, starting to understand, whoa, this person may know a little bit. They may bring a little bit to the table because say, for instance, Facebook or Google, you may have a manager who may have been there for 6 years. They only know Google by this time. I'm sorry. But you need constant change. You need a new blood, new ideas all the time. And just because you are the biggest doesn't mean you're the best. Or just because you're the boldest or brightest or loudest doesn't mean you're the best by far.
Yeah, I was actually talking to my manager about this because for a while, it's a true principle. Like I've had, you know, mentors, and just looking at anyone that's successful, that if you want to make any kind of difference, it usually takes about 3 years minimum to do something big because you're laying down the groundwork, you're building relationships, and it takes time to do that. But also there's like the counterpoint of anyone that stays at a company for 10 years, that's a bad career choice unless you own the company. There, you definitely could stay at a company for 6 years, but if you don't have any like part of the upside, if you're just a normal employee, why? You're not taking any part of the upside. But granted, like, I love how you brought in like the martial arts analogy, because I do, and I'm not actively doing it, but I do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. COVID makes it a little sketchy right now. We'll see what happens, but I just got back, so maybe I'll get back into it. But Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, like what that really taught me was that there, like it affirms like the, what I've been thinking about. And if you've been listening to the podcast, Bobby, sorry, I think out loud sometimes. And so I'm just synthesizing right now, but there's a difference between like complex and complicated problems. There's also a difference between complex and complicated jobs. Complicated, like, is accountant, lawyer. Like there's rules, but they're pretty set. You know, the rules are pretty like, it's complicated. And you could even say development, or like being a Salesforce consultant, is a complicated job, because there's a reason why you could get out of college and do those careers and make really good money out of like college as a newbie, as an associate, because it's rare knowledge, a bunch of complicated rules. And so you could start, but then it usually like tapers off because there's like diminishing returns and just being an expert on new skills. And then UXers, we start low because you're a white belt. It's not rare knowledge to know how to like, it's not like rare to know how to interview people, how to put together wireframes. Like those skills in themselves aren't really intrinsically valuable. It's the person that's doing it, using the moves. Because in jiu-jitsu, you can learn the same move. It could be like a purple belt, yellow belt, and purple belt's like really good. 5 years of in the game. I would say like a purple belt's like a mid-level designer anyways, but they're both learning the same moves. They're both using the same moves, but the purple belt's just like at a higher success rate. And it's not because of the move itself, it's the person. And that's why when you start, then like your income like goes, whoosh, like the income goes pretty steep in UX, because after a couple years in, all of a sudden you're more valuable. Why is that? It's because I'm talking about practice. You've had more practice, right?
It makes all the difference. It does. Hey, let me tell you this real quick caveat. Man, I know like next to nothing about martial arts. So with those belts and boosting and stuff I was saying, man, if you know how to, like you were starting to do, like a purple belt and white belt, man, set me straight. But one thing I do know is that if you know the moves, knowing the moves is one thing. Knowing how to apply the moves and when to do it is another. Just because I watch them. I dare to say I study boxers and people, just fighters. And when I say studies, it's mainly just me just sitting there and just zoning out and just watching what they're doing, considering their skill sets and what they bring to the table. Like to watch boxers who's probably first time, as opposed to someone who's probably been in the ring 50 times. One thing you pick up on is that nervous energy. I'm an athlete. My son is an athlete now. He just branched over into a different sport. So to see him play football, he's like smooth as silk, no nervousness, nothing at all. But he's branched over to basketball. So to see him playing, and he's good, and to see that nervous energy is, okay, son, once you calm down and or let the dust settle, that's when you really just start to have fun with this. Things will be more fluent to you. You'll be able to pick up on things more. And I can say that honestly because he's my son. I know how I am, nervous or flustered. One, I start stuttering, like I said earlier. Two, my thoughts just aren't clicking like they need to. If my thoughts aren't clicking, that means I'm not producing to the highest level of my ability. But once I settle down, the nervousness goes away, the concern or fear of me messing up goes away, then it's when it comes in, okay, let me start to do what I know how to do and not be so concerned about messing up. I'm assuming probably with jujitsu, maybe the same way with you, or maybe the same way just with the sport itself, the martial art, is that folks who have been in this 5 years, they know what a kick feels like. So they're not too nervous about getting kicked in the face again by someone who has this level of expertise. They can take a punch. They know how to take a punch. They know how long, they know how to hit, so the hit doesn't hurt other things. It's all in the experience. And the same thing that goes in any profession that you do, be it a construction worker, be it a bartender, be it a teacher, anything. Once you do something long enough, and you know, hold on, this is a caveat. You can do something wrong for a long time too now. Don't just say this because I've been doing it for a long time, I'm good. Nope. You just know how to do something wrong really well. That's all that means. But hopefully they have the patience enough to learn something different. I learn how to do their, whatever it is they're doing better because they love the craft.
Yeah. Like to go along with that, like the nervous energy thing, like so when you in jiu-jitsu, it's really just, it's grappling. And like when you just start out, it's kind of, you treat it like wrestling. You're huffing and puffing, you know, you're breathing heavy, you're nervous, you're like jerky and you don't know what to do. Like yeah. You're not in control of your body. If you want to master like really good black belts, there's no pain. There's no like heavy breathing. It's like really quiet. All you hear is this little pats on the mat because it's all technique and they're just reacting. Muscle memory, you know, because it takes about 10 in jiu-jitsu, it takes about 10 years for a normal person to get a black belt because it's like maturity and stuff like that. It's like this relaxed energy where like you're using leverage at that point rather than brute force. Exactly. And I noticed that. I know there's a lot of senior designers out there that aren't senior designers. They're senior designers because of tenure. Like they've just been in the industry for a while, but they still got that nervous energy. Like they're still trying to prove themselves. They're still trying to put people down, like an up and coming junior designer that's like crushing it. They have to point out what's wrong in their process. Now we're getting back to process because they need to make themselves feel better. But the ones that like I know are like senior principal designers. Oh, they're so relaxed because they know they could. They're good.
Caden, you also said it earlier too. The best ones, they don't talk a lot. If they see someone messing up, they see someone who's young in a profession messing up. We don't want to put them on blast at all because hopefully we see ourselves in that person. You know the saying, how the saying goes, you see the same people going down that you saw going up or something like that. My interpretation of that is on my way down, or shoot, I'm plateauing, I'm not going down. But on your way down, I'm seeing people who were me, who are struggling to get up. And man, I don't want anybody to go through the school of hard knocks that I did. I don't want them to take any of those classes. I don't want them to see any of those teachers. Meaning none of those experiences. I don't want them to get stuck in wherever they are, just a quagmire of easily being told that you're not good enough or what you're doing is not really valued because, man, this is 2021 and UXers in some places are still hearing information like that from other groups. Are they being made to feel that way? So I would love to just hopefully hearing this, someone can understand that you got to come out of this. You can't let someone else dictate how you feel and where your future is going in this. If this is what you want to do, understand you're going to have some days that stink. You may have a lot of them consecutively and hold on to those good days. Count everything joy. When I say count everything joy, I know that may sound churchy, but the days where you may have thought that you bombed royally, you learned whatever it is that you learned what not to do, whatever it is you did today that bombed. Hey, I learned something different today. What you learn? I learned not to do that stuff again. Cool. Mm-hmm. So that still goes into a repertoire. And if anything, you remember that 10 years from now a lot better than you will something you did very well and someone gave you a pat on the back for. I'm speaking from experience. And I can say this because you probably have been there possibly where you go to an interview setting and they may ask, okay, what are some things you've been proud of you've done over the past few years? Should you draw a blank? They ask you, what are some of the things that you had a hard time with and you struggled to get past? Let them know how you got past it and what some of those pain points were. Man, you could think about 5 or 6 different things like that. It's human nature. It's psychology. Bad things stick a lot better than good things. bad things tend to outweigh the good, but you have to make a decision to to uplift those good things. Let them have the same level of importance, if not more, than the bad things you do, because bad stuff, I say bad, the things that you don't like or things that you would rather went a different way, they build character. They make you who you are. They truly make you who you are. If you always had good days, you may not appreciate them because it happens. So we need to have some failures every once in a while. That means you try something that you're uncomfortable with doing, or you try something that you don't normally do. And if you try for the first time and I got out of the park, cool. That means you need to try something a little bigger or something a little more challenging. And UX is full of challenges. Hell, just my name alone is a challenge, trying to figure out who I am from.
Yeah.
So right now, what is your title, if you don't mind me asking?
That's product designer. I like digital product designer just because it's broad enough where I could actually like focus on things like priority and the full like end spectrum. Like it's broad enough, but it's like clear enough. Like, okay, I'm working in product. I'm not making social media ads. I'm not. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for breaking it down for me, because I noticed earlier you made a point just to say digital product designer. Mm-hmm. Why is it different for you? Why was that something you really had to make a point to put an emphasis on, digital?
Oh, wow. That's a really good question. Yeah. Well, I think it's when you say like product design, and I think eventually it's probably just, there's not going to be like a differentiation. When you say product design, people think like physical, which most products now are just apps on a phone. Like the main product you own is your cell phone. And you might have like Peloton, but even like physical products are now having digital aspects to them if they're sticky. But yeah, I caveat that because I guess like it covers, like the job covers a lot more like information architecture, interaction design, very high probability I'm working on screens than like physical hardware. Work on some physical hardware eventually in my career. But
what do you mean more?
I'm like going into like CAD software, and which I still think we have industrial designers that like make stuff for the end goal of being manufactured. I guess that's why I say it. I guess digital product designer means I design like software, basically. Yeah. And when I talk to grandma, I tell her I design software. I don't even say like product or anything. Like I just say I design the apps on your computer and stuff like that. But at the same time, it's like that doesn't even cover it too, because you're also covering service design aspects of the job, depending on what company you work for. Like I'm working on service design right now, you know, so.
I appreciate you saying that. The reason I can is because I never looked at it like that. I guess that it's probably telling my age and these gray hairs telling on me too when I say that, because just the fact when I used to say graphic design, that sounded fancy. So now with me saying UX, UI design, I have folks who be like, huh, what is that? It sounds fancy. Cool. If I say product designer, to me, that's the trinity. That's research, strategy, and design. So somebody else, I guess I see where you're coming from. They may think product, they may think something I'm going to the store to pick up off the shelf, be it a radio or a can of soup. And so what are you designing about a can of soup, man? You making it work. So I got that. I appreciate you explaining that to me. My brain just got another wrinkle from that. I needed that.
And like into kind of like delve deeper, like how I see it, right? Is there's actually this really great Indian designer where he explained like the difference between a UX designer and a product designer is that like a UX designer is like, he uses like the soldier metaphor, like UX designer is like a sniper. Like they're really like focusing on getting that shot in, focusing on like the experience and the flows and stuff like that. I mean, a product designer is more like a soldier. They're not just shooting all the time, but they're maneuvering. They're working with a team. It's a broad example. But then I think about, I thought it was a good example of what I wanted to work on too, because there's like experience designers, which are basically, they're UX designers, but that's a job title in an ad agency. An experience designer, you're designing something like ephemeral. Like it's like an art installation with, like when I see digital designers, they're designing like ad campaigns using iOS apps or something like that. And it's not exactly like a product, like you're not building a business around the product. And I feel like product design is my space. Is I don't feel like I want to work at an agency. Hmm. Like I want to work on like a core product of a business and I like building a business around a value proposition and where that value proposition fits in the business and how it's generating revenue and stuff, which is probably why there might be a good chance I might go into product management, because I care as much about delivering value to customers as much as the pixels. But I don't know, that's what I've learned.
Hold on. I'm glad you went. Okay, so I'm about to maybe piss a few people off now. If you want to turn off for a couple of minutes. But would you venture to say that the natural progression of, I say UXer, would probably be UX design, maybe UX strategy, or research then strategy, and then maybe up to product management? Would you say that maybe an end goal for UX is possible?
I think so. It depends on the company, because if it's like a big, like technical SaaS B2B company, there might be like a need for a technical product manager, but yeah, there's more and more. So at the company I work for, Homie, our chief product officer is a designer. He built the design team at Redfin. He worked on the Amazon Go stores. Now he's just managing product at the C-suite level. Mm-hmm. Our director of product was my design manager at my last gig. He was a designer, but he went into product management. And so, yes, I do believe that like more designers should be going to product. I actually think product designers are like have the closest overlap to that job description anyways. Right?
They are. I would definitely agree with that. Because think about it, most companies that I've worked with, the ones who tend to be joined at the hip are product designers or product owners or product managers. Are product managers, product owners, and product designers. The ones who tend to bump heads the most, just from what I've seen, are product designers and product owners and product managers. And my philosophy to that is because we're so close in what we do. We both have to gather information. And with the information, we're both just, from a designer, we gather information, we design based on information. Product managers, they gather information, they write requirements based on the information. That's why we have to work so closely together, because their requirements have to match our designs and vice versa. So would you say, when I say natural progression, when I was asking that question, you did say yes. I would almost venture to say that hopefully in the future that a good product manager or product owner would have spent some time as a UX designer, UX strategist or something, just so they can have that empathy. I don't know about necessarily pay, if it's a up in pay or going down in pay. I don't know that much. But one thing I can say is that it's something that's ingrained in you at this level. The level of empathy that's ingrained in you as a UX designer or UX or practitioner, it doesn't match anywhere else. It doesn't match marketing. It doesn't match product. It doesn't match the business or even QA or anyone who probably feel like they deal a lot closer with the customer. We are the voice of the customer. We have to be that. And I think in order to build a great application, you have to understand the customer or the user. And that's, like I said, that's just my two cents. It may have upset a few folks who feel like I could be a great product manager without being UX. Yeah, you'd be good. I'm sorry. Like I say, you can't be like better than someone who can't have a background in UX. Of course, I'm biased, but that's just how I feel. I'm standing.
Hey, what can we say? Like the best product people, you could say that Steve Jobs was a designer. I think he's more of a PM with a design background. What did Steve Jobs do? He had a vision. He held priority. He pushed the vision. Johnny Ive actually did the designs. Like he made the artifacts, right? And the specs. But like him and Steve were like, they're like, Steve, what do you do? And he's like, oh, I make the decisions. And he's like the whole, I'm the maestro. I play the orchestra. And he's like, but Johnny did the designs for all the hardware. And he's like, yeah, he did the designs. But like, I told him what I like wanted. And like, or like I told him the vision. Johnny saw the vision and he thought about, okay, how's this usable? How can we deliver the value in the form of a digital or physical product? Elon Musk was an engineer, but all he cares about is delivering value. And he talked and he's joined at the hip with his like head of design. And they're like putting up like touchscreens in the Tesla to see which one's like going to make a good touchscreen size. But he's not pushing pixels, or he's not like building stuff in CAD necessarily, but he is seeing, hey, this is valuable. We need to prioritize this and we need to deliver this value. And Thomas Edison, he didn't invent the light bulb. Around the same time that he worked on the light bulb, you could find five different people all around the world testing out like vacuum blown glass in a filament. But what he did is he worked to make it viable. He wasn't iterating to find the best design. He's iterating to make it cheap and affordable. And so that you can, so that's product management right there. And you could say, oh, I could get my MBA, but then you look at Elon Musk just recently saying like MBAs are ruining companies.
Wow.
because the language of an MBA is running the business, administrating a business. You're not talking about the product and delivering value to the customer, you know? So
strictly business. I get that. I definitely get that. But man, you hit a couple of things on the head. And even with you saying that, I'm not sure if you want to touch this too much either, but imposter syndrome. Mm-hmm. I just recently had a conversation with a person and they said they were a fan of imposter syndrome. I'll tell you why.
Interesting.
She mentioned that she figured it was a great thing, but when she finished the explanation, like, it was only great at their company. And the reason I say it was only great at their particular company is because their particular company had a lot of patients, meaning that her breakdown of it was imposter syndrome is great because it will be someone stretching further than who they really are, who they basically went to school to be, who they become up to that point. They're stretching further. I might come to work. Her example she gave was that she'll come to work every day and try to, I think she said, be like a QA manager or something like that. She's not. And that just helped her stretch and work her muscles to do something that she never thought she could do. And a company is patient enough with her to let her make those mistakes. I heard that and had to go in one ear and out the other, because most companies, 99.9% of companies you go to, they don't have the patience to deal with it. Of you making mistakes because you lied on your resume, basically, and talked a good game to get yourself in the door. We kind of hit on it earlier a little bit, and that's what I call imposter syndrome. Imposter is you lied to yourself. You told yourself that, hey man, I'm this great UXer. I've been in this boot camp for 8 months now. I got this little certificate right here. It told me that I have graduated. I am a UXer. And you go into a job with that feeling of that you're 6 feet tall and you're really 4'2". Come on. Like you said earlier, we got to crawl before we walk. And you have some folks who are coming out jogging. That's strong imposter syndrome. That you try to talk them down off of that high horse that they're on is impossible to do. And regretfully, a lot of times it takes basically a tragedy in their career for them to realize, oh, okay, I came in a little too high. I should have been a little more humble. I should have listened a little more because I don't know everything. But the wake, what's been left in the wake of what they've done, the damage that's been left behind them being an imposter for so long, sometimes it's irreversible. But what are your thoughts about imposter syndrome? Have you heard that term, or have you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So when you're starting out as like a junior, like you're definitely like improving yourself. I think imposter syndrome is healthy. I think there's a little bit, I think there's something to having a little bit of healthy guilt, because that keeps you honest. Not to get churchy, but having a little healthy guilt, because I knew that I had the education when I started. I knew I've done real world projects, got real work in, but like, I haven't been around the block. So like, I know that there's like, I might be doing the wrong thing. Like I might've made the wrong decision in my day to day. What's funny though, is as I got better and now as I'm more relaxed and I kind of know like what I can handle most things that come at me, is that I lean into what I don't know, but then I rely on communicating what I don't know with whoever I'm working with so that they actually help me out. So like, I guess I just lean into my coworkers to help me out with what I don't know. So for example, critique was the hardest aspect. Being on a design team, doing critique, I didn't like it because my work's my baby. Unlike a lot of designers, I don't think I'm designing the next Mona Lisa with my UI. Like a lot, that stuff's going to get replaced with a redesign in 2 years or something. But it was the fact that I felt like an imposter when I was presenting my work and people were attacking it. And I'm like, maybe I'm not that good. But as I got some wins under my belt and just got the practice in, and that just takes time before you get, it's not like an event either. Like just one day you're going to come into a new job and you feel confident and relaxed. It just happens one day. And then you realize, oh, I'm not nervous. I feel like you feel like a true professional. But now critique is like my favorite time of the week, because now it's like the whole like creativity thing. Pixar, they're like, that first draft of the movie, it's going to be ugly. And you just lean into it. Like your first draft is your first impression based off what you want at that time. You don't know everything. And I just go in, I like try to critique like every week. Like I submit work, I submit wireframes, I submit like really sketchy storyboards that like I threw together, and someone asked me a question. So Caden, like, I've been really impressed with your improvement critique, but like, how do you view critique now? Is it a place to tell people like, hey, this is where I'm going, this is what I think we should do? Or is, do you go there to like workshop your work? And I'm like, both, because I am proposing a direction, but I'm not, I'm basically like giving the respect to my peers that, hey, I don't know everything. Put it out full blast. And I don't even try to defend my designs anymore. I just let them go out full blast. And usually they're really nice about it. They just give feedback. I'm just writing down notes. I'm writing down everything. And honestly, like it's still there. The healthy guilt of, because that keeps you honest. Because if you get too cocky, you're like, oh man, like I could work less hours because I could bang these screens out in 1 hour and then I could don't have to work the rest of the day. But if you don't have that guilt, you're like, hey, but I could get things done faster. But now that kind of opens up the space for me to be more strategic. The guilt's still there. I still have to some degree imposter syndrome, but now I just kind of like lean into the fact that, hey, my first draft's going to suck. My work's not like me, and I'm going to workshop my ideas with peers I respect. So I don't know if that answers your question. That's a rant, but
100%. And from the things you said, a couple of things came to mind. You said the healthy guilt. I would probably look at that. Some people use it as hunger, or they see it as hunger. Even in imposter syndrome, I love how you gave me a different perspective to see it. You see, you like it. Like I was saying, I will look at the guilt, a little bit of a guilt as hunger. As far as giving critiques, that's something that's an art in itself. That to where, and I like how you give those two sides of the coin, basically. Are you coming here to give direction or just tear down or something like that? Because not saying you said that, but that's mm-hmm. how people look at critiques. They don't know how to critique. One thing I say, I just learned how to do it. And my 40 plus year old self, I'm just learning how to argue. And I've been married for almost 20 years. And, hey, but when I say that, is that I didn't do it well. I was either on one end of the spectrum or the other. Either I'm extremely pissed off, I'm not saying nothing at all. Same thing with the critique. A critique is, man, it's the best thing since sliced bread for a designer. If you know how to come in, and first of all, you mentioned being able to just go full blast on the design sometimes, but as long as you kind of give that perspective or have the communication up front, let them know, hey, don't try to defend, just listen. Because if you try to defend, you'd be drinking from the fire hose and maybe some things you will miss just because you're thinking about what to say to defend your design. Just leave it at the door. You'll have plenty of time to defend everything we said, because especially if you're doing a whiteboard session or with Zoom, just type down your notes. And the reason I'm on this is because where I am right now, we just had someone come in. And having critique sessions with that person, I had to let her know, with her being another UXer, like, hey, our meetings need to be closed door. Reason being, someone on the outside looking in may think, man, we're having like a knockdown, drag out argument. And it's not that. We're speaking each other's language. We understand. I guess like you were sparring. If somebody come in and see you sparring with someone, they're fighting. They're going to kill each other. Mm-hmm. Nah, how else am I going to get better if I let dude just, if he just push me, I push him. He pushed mm-hmm. me back. Nah, you got to spar. You got to get in. You may get a bloody nose. If you may get a little hurt, but that means, oh, shoot, I bet they won't catch me again with that, because you learn. Same thing with critiques. A critique is a sparring match for designers. You got to leave your feelings and your brass knuckles at the door, because it's not about defending yourself. It's about hearing what the other person has to give you. And sometimes you have to spit out the bones and eat the fish, because everybody's not good at giving critiques. But they all have something to say. I learned a long time ago, you learn more from your enemies than you do your friends. Mm-hmm. So the same thing goes from a good critique. And so with an imposter syndrome, it can be good, because sometimes we have to fake it till we make it. But one thing I think I heard from you, though, is that you still had a bit of humility there because of those hard pills you had to swap. Because you can remember being in some of those sessions and, damn, I guess I'm not that good if these folks have this much to say about my design. But it takes maturity to understand, shoes, that's great that folks have this much to say about my design. That means I still have something to learn. I still have something to give. And these folks may have something to give me. Now, sometimes it may be crap what they're telling you, but hey, let them get better. You had to. This is my take on it.
Yeah. And you're not critiquing like their feedback, because also it's like good critique is not like binding. Like you could bounce it. Hey, cool. I understand. You write it down. You don't implement it.
Exactly.
Like you could ignore it. And that's why I don't defend my designs and critique, because I don't want to waste time talking about something that doesn't matter. Because if I really strongly believe in my position, it's my team. It's my product I'm working on. They don't have any like skin in the game. Like they're not my boss. Like I am getting, and even if it's like bad, there's like some good ideas in it, what they mean. Like maybe they just didn't articulate it. All I'm doing is write down notes. And that takes a lot of, you have to fail a lot to get to that point of I'm not great. What's the point of me defending my designs? The people I got defended to is my PM and like my engineer to explain like why. And that's a whole nother podcast of articulating designs.
But we said that earlier. How come we can have a sparring match between ourselves? That PM or the developer, those kid gloves got to go back on, man. They're not going to, it'll be like you going to wrestle with a kid when I have fun. You're throwing their asses all over the place and stuff. And man, I don't like playing with you. You throw me too far, or you grab me too hard, or you put me in my ears. I hate you. That's just what I know how to do. Okay, so you have to learn to bring it down a notch. I'll be able to play the way they play. Same thing with the PM and or developer. You have to learn that, have to learn their lingo. Let them learn ours. It's baby steps. You got to take baby steps. You can't go in and introduce these folks like, okay, so the color schemes here are like this, and are we using big words, heuristic evaluation, kind of gave us this type of information from our synthesis. We were able to pull this. And some folks take joy in having people look like they're a deer in the headlight. If you take joy in that, man, you're not the best UX out here at all. You're not even good. Because our job is to have everybody like, yeah, I got you. Oh, yeah, that makes sense. That'd be damn good if you're doing that. If you have, can you say that again? Or can you repeat that? Or I don't get it. I don't care how complex, like how you put that, complex or complicated your application is. If folks are guessing, if folks can't understand what you're saying or what you're trying to convey to them, you're not winning yet. And you're not good. I don't care how long you've been doing this, how many talks you've done, how many books you've written. Man, I saw an article the other, I'm not going to get on an article, but I saw somebody post something out there, and some of these young UXs are reading everything they see. And so they're looking at this and like, okay, so when if I do put radio buttons, I need to have one that's already been selected. That's the best way to do it. What the hell you get that from? Oh, I read it in this article. Look, he even gave examples. Okay, he's a dumbass. Do not read anything else he puts out, and don't take that stuff to heart. We have to make this our own. As a UXer, the best ones, those jittery things, or those jittery emotions and feelings and stuff, that goes away once you get comfortable in what you're doing. Now, when you become comfortable in what you do, you still have to stay hungry. Like you were saying, the guilt that kind of comes along is going to stay there all the time. You have to stay hungry, and you have to stay open to change. And you're going to be learning from everything. Man, I learn from movies. I learn from cartoons. I learn from ingredients on the back of a damn box sometimes, just thinking like, why did they tell you to put it in like this? Or why is it bold when that's in the time of italics? And why is this green? And why is this red? And something's wrong with me putting the egg in right now. All little things we pick up. So as a UXer, I'll leave you with this. I will challenge everybody to go outside every day, every damn day for at least 30 minutes, if not, at worst 15, but at least 30 minutes and do nothing. I want you to watch a cloud. I want you to watch a cloud change shapes. I want you to watch a bug of travel 3 feet. For real. It sounds dumb, but little stuff like that, you need to do a brain dump sometimes, y'all. We go, like right now I'm on this damn podcast on a computer. I've been on two computers all day. But after I leave this, I'm going to go take my dog for a walk. After I finish my drink, I'm going to go take my dog for a walk and enjoy just nature. You have to do that sometimes. Let your windows up. Some of us with this COVID and things like that, we've been shut in. We haven't been ourselves. We're not even producing like we used to produce before. Some good, some bad. But learn how to come back to your best self. Learn who your base is, as for me as Bobby, for you as Caden. Learn who your base is. When I say learn who your base is, learn who the Caden you want is that you want to start from every morning when you wake up. And every night before you go to bed, okay, I'm gonna brush all the other stupid shit off and I'm going back to this cadence so I can rest. This is not on my mind. This is not bothering me anymore. Or I'm not thinking about this. I'll pick this back up tomorrow. But this is base cadence. This is cadence if you was a woman without my makeup, without the wig or whatever that stuff.
Yeah.
Learn who that is.
What's letting your hair down look like?
Yeah. Have you done it? You may have probably haven't done it in years. learn who it is, man, because we got to have something to start from every day. We can't start piling crap back on you, on top of yourself as soon as you wake up. Oh, yeah, I got this project I'm working on. And I got this other project manager who just changed over. And I, man, stop it. Find your base.
Learn. Oh, yeah. And get to a place in your career where you get to shut it off. I mean, and the first step is realizing that UX, and it's one of those jobs where you treat it like a calling. As soon as I'm like, hey, I love my job, I am just working for money so that I could enjoy my life with my family. I have a good lifestyle. Luckily, I enjoy what I do. It's just a job, just a job. And so like when I call in to work, I turn it on. I do a good job. I communicate. I do my work. But then I have to like partition, because my best work happens when I'm not thinking about UX or design, which is ironic because I'm doing a design podcast after work. But yeah.
No, that makes sense, man. That goes to, you know, sometimes we're working on something, we have to get up, walk away, and come back. If we were in the office, man, I took buku cooler breaks. I would just walk down to the kitchen, get some water, come back, look at the screen, like, yeah, I shouldn't have done that stupid shit. Okay, make it. But that happens. I know other designers know exactly what I'm talking about.
And when you're a new designer, yeah, like you got to learn. But like one day you're going to get that muscle memory. You're going to get that expertise where a lot of your habits are automated. When you get to that point, the next level is, it's like the best athletes are really good at resting. Yeah, like they have like hyperbolic chambers and saunas and stuff. What was that? Oh, like I think the best designers that I know have really awesome hobbies. They do stuff. They travel with their families. They take time off. And honestly, there are a couple principles that have really helped me be more relaxed at work, which I think is a good title for this episode, this interview, is like how to be more relaxed at work, because it's understanding that innovation is a process of a team effort of just tinkering over time. There's no big breakthroughs. You're doing tinkering. You need your PM. You need all the people working on it. And you're iterating little by little until you kind of figure out how to make something viable as a product. And I think designers think, oh, like I need to be like super smart. I need to be seen as the expert. I need to be like teaching people how it's done. And so, no, talk less, like to do your job a bit more and communicate better and realize that you need these people that you are having an adversarial relationship with.
Absolutely.
To actually make something good. And yeah,
if I leave you with this,
yeah,
because you just said it, how to relax at work, just how relaxed during work, because even with us working at home, you have to figure out to do something. But there was a story that was told about sharpening your axe. Have you heard that one?
Yeah, sharpen your axe. Yeah,
yeah, about the old guy who was challenged by the younger guy in the lumberjack camp or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sure I can cut down more trees than you. And the old guy didn't flinch. Dude, that's impossible. I've seen you work. You would never cut down more trees than me. It's like, I challenge you for the whole day so you can cut down the most trees. So the next day they get started. Go. Young guy starts off killing them, cutting down the trees. And the older guy, he's paced, relaxed, doing what he do, cutting down the trees as he normally does, stack them. And the younger guy is just going, come lunchtime. Younger guy's like, I'll keep working because I'm already here. Younger guy still going. The older guy takes a break, his lunch break as he normally does. He vanishes for about 15 minutes or so at the end of his lunch break and comes back and starts back. Make a long story short, needless at the end of the day, the older guy managed to catch up with the younger guy and by far surpass him, because the younger guy burned out one. And two, the older guy passed him up because he came and told the younger guy afterwards, basically, son, one thing you didn't notice that I did was that when I took this break, I took time to sharpen my axe. And the reason I took time to sharpen my axe is because I'm going to be working my butt off trying to cut down these trees. But if my axe is dull, it's still not going to be done any faster. So that's why you have to take time to sharpen your skills so that we can learn to work smarter and not harder. And one thing one of my mentors told me too, there's three things you can get from us. You can get these projects good, fast, or cheap. Choose two, only two. If you want it good and fast, it's not going to be cheap. If you want it good and cheap, it's not going to be fast. So choose two. That's where we are. Learn to relax. Learn to sharpen your axe, and learn to relax. This is a marathon, not a race. This is a career. you may bounce around from company to company, but realize I'm about to learn something from these folks that's going to make me better. Okay, then, man, this has been my pleasure. I appreciate you doing this. Young guy, doing a lot of good stuff. I checked you out a little bit on LinkedIn and a little bit other places too. I like what you're doing, man. I really do. Man, I wish you the best. Thank you. Thank you much.
Yeah, thanks for coming on the show, Bobby. Is there anything else you... Well, I guess you said it. I want to ask you one more question before you sign off. What's an asset to every guest, but what's a career setback that you're glad happened?
Career setback that I'm glad that happened. I can say basically what I'm dealing with right now, but that's not good enough. It's not. I've had some much. The career setback that I'm glad happened was when I became a designer on a team of developers and they had no idea what to do with me. And that's what set me, like I said earlier, set me on a path of doing QA and eventually tech support, then customer support, and just gaining that empathy. So at the time, it was a huge setback. It went like 2 years before without me even getting a raise. Horrible reviews because my manager was an IT manager. And this person told me verbatim that either you have to leave the company to make more money, or our director really doesn't see value in a designer and a group of developers. And there was a lot of harsh things that the School of Hard Knocks was just something else for me during that time. But looking back on it in hindsight, it made me who I am. There's a lot of callus. There's a lot of scar tissue there. But it's for me to work through. And it's for me to see in others, if I see in someone else starting to build up, being able to let them know, hey, don't let that set in. Don't let that form, because it's so hard to get rid of it. And it makes it twice as hard to be the person who you could be later on. Learn from it, but don't let it sit there and fester. So that's what it was for me.
That's awesome. Thank you for sharing that. It sounds like you just described grad school. You don't get a raise for 2 years. Man. You learn a bunch of stuff that you didn't know was important. So, hey, it's like you going to grad school, just real life, and at least you got paid. But yeah. Thanks, man.
Can't wait to see more from you. Be able to look back and say, hey, I was on a little block show with that man. You see a guy, names and lights and everything. Oh, yeah, that was me. Go ahead and check it out back when I only had a little bit of gray hair.
Yeah, dude, we'll keep an eye on you.
Hey, I'm keeping an eye on you. So yeah. Good stuff. Onward and upward. Let's talk later, man. For real. Let's do this again.
Yeah, for sure. I'd love that. Yeah, you have a good one.
Hey, you too, man. Take care.
Bye. Hey.
Thanks again for listening to The Way of Product Design. One quick favor. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with your network, your friends, and hit that subscribe button on the show wherever you're listening to it. Thanks again for listening to the show, and I'm really excited to bring more awesome interviews and content your way. So keep listening. You won't be disappointed.